morning, everybody. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you being here today. I mean, between the snowpocalypse blizzard and the fact that it's a holiday weekend, you are obviously the few, the proud, the we really love Jesus crowd. Either that or you're just really into free donuts and coffee. I don't know, but you're here. Those of you who are watching online, we're glad you're here. Nothing we can do about the donuts. You're on your own with that. But I know you're not here by accident. I believe God has some words of encouragement, some challenges, and some next steps for all of us to take in our faith journey. And as you can see, we are continuing in this series called Transitions, where we are exploring healthy and God-honoring ways to walk through the inevitable changes that are a part of all of our lives. And we set a couple of principles for this journey, a couple things we need to remember as we're talking about transitions. One is to recognize that change and transition are two different things. We use those words interchangeably, but they're actually different. Change is situational. Transitions are psychological. You understand what I'm saying? Change are those external things that happen to us or around us or in us. Transitions are the way we mentally, emotionally, and spiritually process those changes and proceed through those changes. And then the second principle we want to make sure we remember is that transition always transforms. That it's not the changes that change and mold and shape you. It's the transition. It's the way you go through it. And those transitions, you can choose. You don't get to choose the changes most of the time. Some you do, but most of the time, you don't get to determine what are the changes in your life. But you do get to choose whether you will transition through those changes in a way that will make you more like Jesus or will just make you more like the world around you. So last week, we started by just looking at change of plans. How do you transition when you have a change of plans? When things don't go the way you saw them going in your head. And we discovered that while making plans is good, the Bible's clear, we need to plan. Only a fool doesn't plan. But we also learned that we are to trust God more than our plans. We have to trust that God is moving and working even if things aren't working out the way we thought they should. Now, this week, I want to talk about stormy transitions. Those changes that take you by complete surprise. Those difficult things in life that you never saw coming. Maybe for you, it's an unexpected death of someone that you love. I'm not talking about when somebody was older or somebody had been sick for a while. I'm talking about that call in the middle of the night that's totally unexpected. Or maybe your stormy transition has to do with your health. You just went to the doctor for your annual physical, and they drew some blood work, and all of a sudden, boom, now they're talking about stage four. Or maybe it's in your career, your job. I mean, you're zooming along, you're thinking everything's good. Maybe I might even be up for that next promotion. And then all of a sudden they show up, knock on your door, and you're packing everything up in boxes and being led to the door by security. That's what I mean by stormy transitions. These major, overwhelming life changes that come out of the blue. How do you process that? How do you proceed when your world is falling apart? How do you walk through that kind of change when you are scared to death? And that's what I want us to drill down on this morning. You know, if you've lived down south here for a while, you probably are aware we have three kinds of rainstorms. One is just the gentle soaking rain. You know the one I'm talking about? Where it just kind of rains. It's not heavy. It's not storm. It's just drizzly rain and it kind of rains all day, right? It's inconvenient a little bit, you know, especially if you've got some outdoor plants, but it's not really life altering. The second kind are those afternoon thunderstorms. Usually get them in the spring and in the summer. And here we even get them in the fall, right? They don't take you completely by surprise. You kind of can tell they're coming. They're usually predicted by weathermen. You know, the wind picks up. You can see the dark clouds coming from the horizon. And then when it gets here, the rain is really heavy. There's wind, there's thunder, there's lightning. But it's not a total surprise. But then there's the third type of rainstorm. These big, violent, pop-up storms that come out of nowhere. You know the ones I'm talking about? Where it's not predicted, it's a bluebird day, blue skies, everything's beautiful, sun is shining, and all of a sudden, boom, it's like the world is coming to an end. The rain's pouring down, the wind, the thunder, the lightning. You ever been through one of those storms? How many of you have been through? How many of you have ever driven on an interstate in a pop-up violent thunderstorm, right? Yeah, that's a scary, scary thing, isn't it? And there are really three options when you drive through a storm like that. One is just stop, pull over to the side of the road, and hopefully it passes soon. How many of you are pullover people? You just stop and pull over people. Yeah. Have you noticed you pull over like that and you think this is a smart idea, but then you realize other people are not stopping and they can't see past the front of their hood, and you're sitting there going, somebody's going to run into the back of me, right? It's kind of scary. The other option is to slow way down, put on your flashers, and just try to move through it as best as you can. How many of you are slow down flasher people? Yeah, that seems like a really good plan, but here's the reality. You still can't see no matter how slow you go. Right? And it's exhausting, is it not, to drive that way? Man, you finally get on the other side, like your hands are cramping up because you've been white-knuckling it. You're exhausted. There's a third way to drive through a storm like that, and that's just to keep barreling ahead. How many of you just keep driving like you were, like there's no big deal? Yeah, apparently that's what they teach in truck driver school. Have y'all noticed that? Like 18-wheelers, they never slow down, and they're blowing your car all over the road, right? Here's the problem. We apply those types of transitions in big storms to life storms, right? Maybe you get hit by one of these big unexpected storms and you just shut down. You just turn inward and just hope maybe you'll be on the other side of it. Or maybe you just kind of slow your life down and you're just trying to figure it out, moving forward, but you're still overwhelmed by fear and stress. Or maybe you're a barrel thrower, right? You just keep going like nothing's happened, pretending I'm okay, you're okay, and you're just going to get to the other side of it. The problem is none of those are healthy or helpful ways to transition through the big, unexpected life storms. So what should we do? Well, I'm glad you asked, because we find some great principles in God's Word that can help us navigate the big, unexpected storms of life. So if you got a Bible or a Bible app, join me in the Gospel of Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. It's the second book of the New Testament. It's between Matthew and Luke. And as you're getting there, let me give you a little context, because context is critical when you're studying the Bible. You think I didn't see the way y'all made fun of me on that Facebook reel last week? I saw it. I took names. We'll talk later. So I'm trying to put all of my little Philippisms in one message. So the disciples have been following Jesus for a pretty good bit of time, right? They've heard him teach multiple times. They've seen him do miracles. They've seen him heal the sick, give sight to the blind, the lame man walk. They've seen his power. And so they are convinced at this stage that Jesus is no ordinary rabbi, right? That Jesus is definitely from God. That he is definitely a man of God. But they haven't quite yet reached the realization that Jesus is God, that he is the Messiah, God in the flesh. But that's about to change because of this storm. Beginning with verse 35, notice what it says. It says, that day when evening came, he, talking about Jesus, he said to the disciples, let's go over to the other side. He's talking about the lake or Sea of Galilee. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. and a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. And Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" So he got up. He rebuked the wind and the waves. "Quiet! Be still!" And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And he said to the disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And they were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?" And as we walk through this incredible event, we find three keys to navigating life's big storms. Number one, first thing we have to do is be in the right boat. You want to navigate these big storms, you got to be in the right boat. The question is not whether you're going to go through storms like that in life. It's inevitable. You live long enough. The question is, are you going to try to go through them with Jesus or try to go through them on your own? Notice again, beginning at verse 35. It says, "That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, 'Let's go over to the other side.' Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat." What does that mean? Just as he was in the boat. Well, if you look at the context, if you read the verses ahead of them, you'll see that Jesus had spent the entire day teaching a large crowd of people. And he was teaching on the lake shore, the Sea of Galilee, the shore of this big Middle Eastern lake. And as was common with those crowds when Jesus taught, they pushed in and got close to him so that nobody could see him or hear him. So he would often get in a boat, have that boat paddle off into the water just a little bit offshore and sit down and continue to teach. That way everybody could see him, and the lake formed sort of a natural amphitheater, an acoustic assistant so that everybody could hear him. And so that's what Jesus was doing, what he always did. But not only was Jesus already in the boat, it was his idea to cross to the other side. Now think about this. On this side of this, we know who Jesus is. We know he is God. So do you think Jesus didn't know that they were going to run into this big storm if they went across the lake at this particular time of evening? Right? Do you think the storm took Jesus by surprise? The answer would be no, right? No. So why? Why would Jesus intentionally lead them into this huge, life-altering, deadly storm? I'll tell you why. Because there was a man on the other side of that lake who was in desperate need of Jesus. There was a man whose life had been overwhelmed and destroyed by a demon. A man who had been completely separated, not just from his family, but his entire village. A man who was now homeless, sleeping in a cemetery, and so overwhelmed by the evil that he was literally cutting himself with stones. And Jesus said, "I'm leaving the 99 to go to the one, even if we have to go to a storm to get there." My point is this. Being in the right boat is not just doing your own thing and asking Jesus to get in your boat. Being in the right boat is going wherever Jesus is going and doing whatever Jesus calls you to do to reach the lost and broken, even if you have to go through a storm to get there. That's one of the biggest misconceptions of Christianity today, especially in the American church, is this idea, if I follow Jesus, if I live my life in Jesus' boat, we're going to have smooth sailing. Like somehow following Jesus is going to make the external circumstances of my life better, smoother. After all, I'm following Jesus. He controls everything. If I'm doing what he wants me to do, surely he's going to make my path easy. We might run into a little bitty thunderstorm, But I'm not going to lose somebody I love unexpected. I'm not going to lose my job for no reason whatsoever. I'm not going to get sick and not be able to be cured. Surely following Jesus makes my life better. No, not your external circumstances. I don't know where that idea comes from, to be honest with you, because it's nowhere in Scripture. Nowhere where somebody gives their life to Jesus and starts following him and everything comes up roses. Right? The Apostle Paul, right? The greatest Christ follower ever. Have you noticed from the moment he gives his life to Jesus and starts following Jesus, the circumstances, the external circumstances of his life get worse, not better. But you know what gets better? An inner sense of peace that's not controlled by the storms. A deep sense of fulfillment and purpose that comes from doing what you are created to do. Be in the right boat, but don't expect to be on the love boat cruise following Jesus. But expect to live on a mission that's bigger than you and is more fulfilling than you can ever imagine. You know, something else in this passage, I've never really noticed this before, but it's at the end of verse 36. Did you see that? Look at what it says. There were also other boats with him. Right? It's not just Jesus and the disciples, that one boat crossing the lake. There are other boats. Now, I don't know who's in that other boat. I don't know if it's some of the other followers who aren't part of the 12 apostles. Maybe it's some people that were sitting there in the crowd and thought, I really like this guy. I see him going across the lake. Maybe I'll go, but you know, I don't want to be in a distance. I don't want to be in his boat because I might have a change of plans. I got a little FOMO. It might not work out the way I want, and I want to be able to control my boat. I don't know who's in that boat, but I do know this in our lives. There's a difference between being in Jesus' boat and just with Jesus' boat. It's really interesting. When they get through the storm and get to the other side where the Gadarene demoniac is and Jesus heals him, there's no mention of the other boats. Not one mention. And I don't want to read into the Scripture, and I'm speculating here, but I wonder what happened. Did they see the storm and go, yeah, thank you, no, I'll do my own thing? Or maybe they got in the storm without Jesus and it overwhelmed them. I don't know. But I know this. If Jesus is truly Lord of your life before the storm hits, it is much easier to see him as Lord over the storm when your storm hits. Now, I'm not saying you can't cry out to Jesus for the first time when the wheels come off. You obviously can, and he will answer. I'm just saying it's easier to process and proceed through the big storms of life if you're already in a close relationship walking with Jesus. Here's the thing. You've heard me say this a million times. Life is a series of storms separated by brief periods of peace and calm. So that means we're all in one of three places, right? We're either going into a storm right now, we're in the middle of the storm right now, or we're just coming out of a storm for a few minutes peace, but eventually we're going back into one. And so my question is, whose boat are you in? Right now, whose boat are you in? Are you in your own boat, doing your own thing, living your own life? Or maybe you're like in the crowd, you're just kind of following Jesus. You're a little bit curious, but you don't want to overcommit. You want to have your options. Or are you living on mission for Jesus? The boat you're in will determine how you come outside on the other side of life storms. You got to be in the right boat. Number two, you got to cry out to Jesus honestly. Cry out to Jesus honestly. See, because just because these guys were in Jesus' boat, it not only didn't mean they didn't have to go through a storm, it did not also make them immune from fear and panic when the storm hits. Because that's exactly what they did. They panicked. Now remember, four of these 12 guys are professional fishermen. They have spent their entire lives on this same lake, a lake, a region that was prone to sudden, unexpected storms. Not their first storm, but it would seem it is by far their worst storm. Verse 37, it says, a furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Now, I'm a visual kind of learner, so when I was reading that, in my mind, I see this, but I don't know exactly how big it is. I mean, it's not a big old ship, but it's not a little tiny John boat. There's 13 people in there at least, and Jesus somehow is in a place where he can sleep, and so it's a pretty good-sized boat, but these waves are coming over the side of the boat, and I can just see the disciples. They're bailing the water as fast as they can, and they're doing all that they can, and at some point they realize they can't bail water fast enough, and they are going to sink. See, at some point, they got to the end of themselves. At some point, they got to, despite their experience and their abilities as fishermen, they got to the end of themselves. And notice what happens. Verse 38, Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Now, a couple things I don't want you to miss. One, the fact that Jesus is sleeping. I'm not sure how that happens, right? How do you sleep in a storm like this? I mean, either he was really tired from a day of preaching, but I'm wondering if it's not more likely that Jesus was sleeping so that the disciples could get to the end of themselves, so that they would have to turn to him, that they would have to cry out to him. Also, don't miss what they say to Jesus, how they ask for help. "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" I mean, you would think if you're asking somebody to rescue you, you'd approach with a little more respect, right? But yet, isn't that natural? When you're scared to death, when the wheels are coming off, everything you thought you could count on has now changed. "Don't you care, God? Don't you care that I'm sick? Didn't you care about my son and his struggle? Don't you care about our family being able to survive? Don't you care?" But here's the thing, and don't miss this. Jesus responds to their cry for help anyway. Verse 39, he got up, rebuked the wind and waves. "Quiet, be still." And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. I shared with y'all last week, I'm so often drawn to the words and the life story of King David. I love to read the Psalms. I love to read 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles and Samuel. I love to read about David's life story. And here's why. Because David is the real deal. He is gut level honest with God. He's prayed like the disciples pray. "God, don't you care that my enemy is winning?" I mean, read the book of Psalms sometimes. Right, David has this authentic, he's angry with God, he's desperate for God. He has this real, raw relationship with God, and yet he is called by God a man after God's own heart. My point is this, God's desire is not some formal, sterile, religious relationship with us. God's desire is an authentic, intimate connection with us. Did you notice? Jesus yells at the storm, but not so much the disciples. Right? Mark writes this way, he rebuked the wind and the waves. And the English translations has exclamation points behind "quiet, be still." That's why I read it the way I read it. But when he speaks to the disciples, Mark doesn't say rebuke. The English translators didn't put exclamation points. Look at what Jesus, look at how he responds, verse 40. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Again, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know the tone. But I just know he's a lot more rebuking and angry sounding towards the storm than he is towards these scared to death disciples. I can tell you this, I can't think of a single time in all of the Gospels where Jesus refused to respond to someone's cry for help because of the way that they cried out for help. But I do see consistently throughout the Gospels, Jesus rebuking and resisting those who come to him full of pride and arrogance and self-sufficiency. I don't know what storm is sinking your boat, but I can tell you Jesus responds to our desperate cries, our honest cries for help. And then finally, number three, the third thing we need to do to navigate the big storms of life is to see Jesus in a new light. See Jesus in a new light. You know, we talk all the time about how going through the storms make you stronger, right? When you go through, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But what we're learning in this series is it's not the storm that makes you stronger. It's how you deal with it. It's how you transition through the storm that determines whether it's making you stronger or weaker. And one of the things that life storms can do is they can give you a more accurate view of who Jesus really is. Definitely happened to the disciples. Notice verse 41. They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this that even the winds and the waves obey him?" Why are they terrified? The storm has already been calm. There are no waves. They've already been saved. Why are they terrified? Because they realize the guy they're in the boat with ain't just a teacher. He ain't just a really good rabbi. He ain't just a man sent from God. They realize they are in the boat with Yahweh, the God of the universe, the one who spoke everything into existence. They are overwhelmed by that realization of who Jesus is. They grew up in the Old Testament, the Torah. They knew that God created the world through speaking it. And now they saw Jesus, this guy they thought was a really good teacher. He is now controlling by speaking over the wind and waves. That's why, what's that old saying? Don't be afraid of the storm. Be afraid of the one who controls the storm. Now, this is not a fear like, oh my gosh, run and hide. It is an awe, a reverence. And so as Christ followers, we have to live in this tension of a God that we can come to and say, "Don't you even care? Don't you care, God?" And yet at the same time, a God who controls everything simply through his voice. We have to recognize, yes, we can cry out honestly to Jesus, but we also got to recognize who we're talking to. This ain't the big man upstairs. This ain't my buddy Jesus. This is God incarnate, and we can have an intimate relationship with him where, like David, like these disciples, we can honestly cry out, but we also got to grow up a little bit. That's why Jesus said, "Come on, guys. Come on, guys. Don't you have some faith? Aren't you going to grow?" The Bible says God corrects and disciplines those he loves. And so Jesus is probably not yelling at the disciples. He's not angry with the disciples. He's just trying to help them take a next step in their journey of faith. They got to see Jesus in a new light. A couple years ago, some of y'all might remember, we did a whole series of messages on the miracles of Jesus. And we looked at a bunch of them. And one of the things we discovered in that series is that the purpose of Jesus' miracles was not just about helping people. that it wasn't just about healing sick or giving sight to the blind. That a big part, the reason Jesus did the specific miracles that he did, was to reveal himself to the people around us. That's the ultimate purpose of the miracles of Jesus, to reveal who Jesus really was. That same thing is still true today. That storm you're in and the way Jesus responds to your cry for help is an opportunity for you to see Jesus in a whole new light, a clearer, more accurate picture of Jesus in your life. Some of you old folks like me, you might remember there was a Christian song that was super popular years ago. I don't remember the name of it. I don't remember who sang it, but I remember the chorus. It went like this, and I know I'm not going to sing. Sometimes he calms the storm. With a whisper, peace be still, he can settle any sea. But it doesn't mean he will. Sometimes he holds us close and lets the wind and waves go wild. Sometimes he calms the storm, and other times he calms his child. And that's what Jesus offers us, peace in the midst of storms. Would you pray with me? Maybe you're here this morning and you're in Jesus' boat and you've been living on mission. And you're in a storm right now and you're struggling to try to figure out how does God want to move and work in this? I'm praying this morning that God would be speaking into you to show you the purpose beyond the pain. Or maybe you're here and you're just kind of following Jesus' boat a little bit. You're still kind of trying to live your own life, do your own thing with a little bit of Jesus sprinkled in. I'm praying God would move you to let go of the stuff of this life and grab hold to that purpose-driven, abundant life he's calling you to. Or maybe you're just kind of curious. You've heard about this Jesus, but you've heard all kinds of conflicting things. I'm praying today that you get a clearer picture of who Jesus is and the power of the gospel to transform your life. Before we leave here today, we've got prayer encouragers. They're on either side of the worship center and about halfway back. I want to encourage you, if you just need to talk with somebody, pray with somebody, stop by. They'll be here through the end of the service, even after the service. You want to talk to somebody about how to have an authentic, real relationship with Jesus, how to experience the gospel and its transforming power personally, they're here for you. We got these crosses down here on either side, and there's little pieces of paper and thumbtacks. Maybe there's something you want to bring to the cross just privately, something you're struggling with, you just want to give to Jesus. Or maybe you just want to offer a prayer or a step of commitment. I don't know what that is for you. I'm just going to encourage us to move as God's Spirit moves among us, not just for the rest of this service, but as we leave this place and live the life we were created to live. Jesus, move among your people. Pour out your Spirit. It's in your name I pray. Amen.